Welcome to the Sandwell News for the blind and visually impaired community living in and around Sandwell, this edition for Saturday, October the 11th.
Sunrise this week will be at 7:30, sunset at 6:15pm. A little cold in the morning, but rising to around 14 degrees centigrade by the middle of the day.
Some stories coming up from the papers. Wednesday, the 1st of October. Mystery surrounds resignation of Labour councillor. One pedestrian dies and 59 seriously injured in e-scooter crashes last year. Thursday's news, Baggies captain backs mental health campaign. Work on collapsed sewer at Hilltop disrupts traffic. Friday's news. Free travel schemes have helped deliver more than 9 million bus journeys over last 18 months. Parents will be offered free travel over half term to help keep children occupied. 30-mile charity walk to watch a Baggies game. Saturday's news. Patricia Routledge dies age 96. 5-month wait to have broken window repaired. Murder before Evensong shot at locations around the West Midlands. Monday's news. Reform to contest every ward in the borough. Tram link to Dudley delayed until next year. Tuesday's news. Supermarket groceries can cost twice as much when ordered through a delivery app. Co-op notches up more than 560 hours of volunteer help and donated more than £5.5 million to good causes. The rise of the well-heeled middle-class shoplifter.
Yes, well, before the AI voices take over altogether, this is me here, human, in person, saying welcome to this edition. And those stories, of course, and more, coming up courtesy of Express and Star Publications. Hour and a quarter or more in, we'll have the listings for forthcoming TV and radio programmes you might like to watch and listen to. And one or two items also, including a piece about gardening from TNF. And I hope to squeeze in another excerpt from the recording I made of Peter Clovier's work some years back now at the Express and Star. And I think the news about the Albion match isn't good, but Linda will be here with that towards the end of this edition. Here's the first day's news.
This is James Brodie bringing to you stories from the Express and Star dated the 1st of October. Mystery surrounds councillors' short-lived resignation from party. A Sandal Labour councillor has had a change of mind after declaring he had left the party on social media. Prince's End councillor David Wilkes revealed his decision to leave Labour on social media. He tweeted earlier this month, "I've made the difficult decision to resign my membership of the Labour Party. I joined the Labour Party believing their promises to change the country, but the promises have not been fulfilled. I can no longer support the way the party is governing." Councillor Wilkes is not a lifelong Labour supporter. He was first elected in Prince's End as a Conservative in January 2024, and he and fellow Prince's End Tory Archer Williams defected Labour, blaming the impact of then-Tory Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's policies on his ward, one of the most deprived in the region. Councillor Wilkes did not reply to the Express and Star's request for a comment about his resignation from Sir Keir Starmer's party. However, this week he has posted several Labour social media missives after deleting his resignation tweets. He shared tweets by West Midlands Labour Mayor Richard Parker and MP Antonia Bance. His Sandal Council page also shows he remains a Labour councillor. One pedestrian died and 59 seriously hurt in e-scooter crashes last year. One pedestrian was killed and 59 were seriously injured in e-scooter crashes in Britain last year, figures show, causing a charity for blind people to brand them fast, silent and unpredictable. A further 158 suffered minor injuries in collisions with the vehicles, according to the Department for Transport, that's the DFT, statistics. Pedestrians were the road user type most at risk of being injured by e-scooter crashes last year, excluding the vehicle's users. They were followed by cyclists, 47 injured, car occupants, 12 injured, and motorcyclists, 7 injured. The UK has been described as an outlier amongst developed nations by banning private e-scooters from public areas, although they are often illegally used in many urban areas. The Royal National Institute of the Blind People, that's the RNIB, expressed concerns over the use of e-scooters in pedestrianised areas. RNIB policy lead Eric Matthews said e-scooters are fast, silent and unpredictable, often ridden on pavements and in other pedestrian areas. Even if a blind or partially sighted pedestrian hasn't yet had a collision or near miss with an e-scooter, their increased risk can lead them to limit their walking journeys. Some 77% of respondents to a survey of blind and partially sighted people conducted by the charity earlier this year said the behaviour of e-scooter riders makes them feel unsafe. 5 e-scooter users died in crashes in 2024. There were also 366 users seriously injured, while 725 suffered minor injuries. A total of 1,390 people were killed or injured in e-scooter crashes last year, a slight increase from 1,387 in 2023. Legal trials of rental e-scooters and roads have been ongoing in towns and cities across England since July 2020. A study commissioned by the DfT published in December 2022 found the vast majority of residents in trial areas had witnessed users of either rental or private e-scooters engaged in antisocial behaviour, such as racing each other and performing dangerous stunts. The government has committed to regulate e-scooters and encouraging an increase in usage. Steve Gooding, director of motoring research charity the RAC Foundation, said, "As with all new developments in transport, we need to be mindful of the advantages they offer, but also the risks they can pose, particularly from irresponsible users." Girlfriend of alleged murder victim describes his collapse. Court told he'd been urged to get treatment but died 4 days after the attack. This story is brought to you by Deborah Hardiman. The girlfriend of a man who collapsed at home days after being injured in a confrontation in a West Bromwich pub had told jurors of the moment he deteriorated. 4 adults and a teenager are on trial in connection with the murder of Matthew Adams, the 33-year-old father of 2 known as Whacker of Yew Tree on the Walsall Sandwell border, was attacked on the Gough Arm pub's Hilltop West Bromwich in the early hours on March 19, 2023. He died 4 days later as a result of his injuries. Giving evidence in the witness box on Monday, his girlfriend, Amy Pohl, told Wolverhampton Crown Court of the moment he found Mr. Adams collapsed in bed just minutes after she dialed for an ambulance when she noticed that his condition had taken a turn for the worse. A tearful Miss Pohl, a health worker, told the jury Mr. Adams had been in pain since the incident and she'd encouraged him to get treatment for his injuries every day following the incident at the Jowett's Lane public house. She said that he'd been taking painkillers kept in the cupboard at home and that relatives had arranged to pick up the prescription medication, which he did not get to take due to his collapse. Mrs. Pohl said, "I got home at 1:30 p.m. and went straight upstairs to see Matt. He looked awful. He looked very dehydrated. His skin colour had changed to a grey tinge. His eyes were sunken. Matt was awake and in bed, puffing on his vape. I told him, 'I'm going to ring for an ambulance now. There is something wrong with you.' He told me that he was fine. 'Do what you want,' he sounded annoyed. I was crying and phoned the ambulance. I also phoned my ex-husband's brother, Callum Paul, to come to help me move him. I just wanted some support as Matt didn't want to listen to me. It's now a blur, but I left the bedroom for some reason. It may have been to see about the dog. I can't remember why. When I returned to the bedroom, he collapsed and was in a different position than before. I went over to him. He was unresponsive. I tried to find a pulse. I rang 999 again. I was frantic." Miss Annabel Darlow, KC prosecuting, played recordings of the emergency phone calls to the jury. The witness could be heard screaming for help. The court was told crews arrived within minutes and took Mr. Adams to hospital, but he tragically passed away. Mark Shorthouse, 53, Ryan Stanley, 30, John Wise, 42, and a 16-year-old boy, all of Sandwell, all deny murder, manslaughter and violent disorder. Nicholas Stanley, 39, also of Sandwell, denies violent disorder relating to the case. The trial continues. Woman covered officers in spit during botched escape. She pleaded guilty to theft and 3 counts of assaulting an emergency worker. The story is brought to you by Adam Smith. A West Bromwich shoplifter kicked and spat at officers while shouting for help from the public as she tried to escape from a police car. Leanne Garrett, 44, had been released from custody for shoplifting at Sainsbury's in Oldbury days before she returned to steal again on March the 22nd this year. She was spotted by security staff after changing into a tracksuit she had stolen. After being arrested, she became violent whilst being transported to Wolverhampton Police Station, kicking and covering officers in phlegm. Garrett of Bromford Road, West Bromwich, pleaded guilty to theft and 3 counts of assaulting an emergency worker and was sentenced at Wolverhampton Crown Court on Friday. Prosecuting Timothy Sapwell said she entered the store wearing sunglasses and picked out wine, flowers and a tracksuit from the shelves worth £156. She then changed into a tracksuit and exited via the self-service checkouts while she was detained by security staff. Whilst in the office awaiting for the police, she displayed behaviours which raised concerns about her mental health. He added that she was arrested and taken to Albury Custody Suite and then redirected to Wolverhampton. En route, she became agitated and aggressive. Officers were forced to pull over and try to adjust her position in the back. They were in a normal vehicle because they did not have access to a caged van. Where they stopped was in a residential street where people were walking around. She put her legs out of the vehicle so that she could not close the door. She was shouting to people to help and claiming that she was being assaulted. He added, after a struggle trying to reposition her, she spat at the officers. She kicked the door. The officers then sprayed her. She continued to spit at officers, which landed on their chest, hand and face. They took her out of the vehicle and put her on the floor in restraints and waited for a more suitable vehicle to take her to Wolverhampton. Upon arrival, she continued to be aggressive. She kicked another officer and again spat at officers. The officers said in victim impact statements, being spat at was disgusting and made them fear of contracting disease. In mitigation, the court heard that Garrett suffers from serious mental health issues and had not been taking her medication at the time of the offences. Garrett was remanded in custody and has spent 6 months in custody, part of which was in a secure mental health unit. Recorder Ben Mills, you became violent, you kicked them, you spat at them. I've read victim statements from the shop and the police officers. The officers were going about their daily work and they had not been there to be spat at and kicked, and it has a lasting effect on them. He added, you have been in custody for 6 months, therefore you have been punished for those offences. I'm sentencing you to 12 weeks imprisonment, so you will be released today. You have made significant progress with your mental health. I hope this continues.
This is Alison, reading a selection of articles from the Express and Star, Thursday the 2nd of October. Greggs sales are hit as people put off hot food in heatwave. New menu includes egg pots, protein shakes, pumpkin latte and toffee muffin. Greggs has revealed its sales rose in recent months, but blamed unusually hot July weather and a tough consumer backdrop for a slowdown in growth. The high street bakery chain, with 2,675 shops in the UK, has continued to expand its sprawling estate across the country. It reported a 6.1% increase in sales over the third quarter of 2025, compared with the same period a year ago. On a like-for-like basis, which strips out the impact of new shop openings, sales growth across company-managed shops slowed to 1.5% year-on-year. It also marks a slowdown from the 2.6% like-for-like growth recorded over the first half of the year. Unusually hot weather held back sales in July, as shoppers made the most of the sunny conditions and were put off hot foods such as sausage rolls and steak bakes. But trading got on the front foot again in August and September, Greggs told investors. The bakery chain highlighted the expansion of its menu. New items available to customers include high-protein options like egg pots and protein shakes, and seasonal items such as its pumpkin spice latte and toffee fudge muffin. It has also continued to open new shops recently in Tesco and Sainsbury's as part of a partnership with the supermarket chains, as well as relocating smaller shops to better locations. Total openings on a net basis, which subtracts the number of closures, were 57 so far this year. Greggs said it was now expecting 120 net new openings for the year as a whole, which would be slightly lower than its previous target. The company told investors it was making progress despite challenging market conditions, indicating that consumer confidence has remained weak. Baggies Captain backing mental health campaign. The captain of West Bromwich Albion has added his support to a campaign looking to help remind men to check up on their mates. Baggies skipper Jed Wallace is backing the You OK, Mate? campaign, which aims to remind people that men's mental health matters. The site offers support for people struggling with their own mental health, as well as for people worried about a friend, and also offers advice on domestic abuse, drugs, alcohol and other support topics. The campaign is being run by Healthy Sandwell, as a way of supporting people and getting people talking about how they're feeling, something Jed said he would do regularly. He said, "As captain, I'm always checking in with the lads. A simple, 'You okay, mate?' can go a long way. No matter what colours you wear, we're all on the same team. Let's get men talking." A message on the Healthy Sandwell website said, "If you need urgent help, call 111 and dial option 2. This is the NHS helpline. It's free, confidential and available 24/7. Community heroes given hugely deserved medals. It was a day for community heroes who have made the region a richer and kinder place to receive their royal awards. 6 people from Sandwell and Walsall were among 11 recipients to receive their British Empire Medal from the Lord Lieutenant for the West Midlands, Derek Anderson, CBE, at a special ceremony on Thursday at Birmingham Council House. Kerry Green and Deborah Lowe from Rowley Regis, Carl Ledbury from Oldbury, Balbir Singh from Smethwick, and David Payne and Joan Lockley from Walsall were all awarded the British Empire Medal for making an active contribution to help others, volunteer their time selflessly, and work to support others who may have been vulnerable or suffering. The recipients were Kerry Green for services to the community in Rowley Regis, Deborah Lowe for services to the community in Rowley Regis, Carl Ledbury for service to the community in Oldbury, Balbir Singh for services to the community in Smethwick, David Payne for services to the community in Aldridge, Joan Lockley for services to wildlife. The Lord Lieutenant for West Midlands, Derek Anderson, said he believed the recipients reflect the depth and breadth of caring and goodwill that many people provide in the West Midlands. He said, "The investiture is a wonderful opportunity to recognise some exceptional people who have dedicated their lives to improving the lives of other people in this region. It is heartwarming to know that we are fortunate to have people that give so much and make a big difference to the communities where they live." Man at protest denies assault. A man has denied assaulting a police officer by beating after disorder broke out during protests in central London. Lewis Sivens, 33, of Farmaway, Tipton, West Midlands, appeared at Westminster Magistrates Court yesterday and pleaded not guilty to assaulting an emergency worker, PC Moroni Cesario, by beating in the borough of Westminster on September the 13th. Between 110,000 and 150,000 people turned out for activist Tommy Robinson's Unite the Kingdom rally, with around 5,000 involved in an anti-racism counter-demonstration. The Metropolitan Police said there were several incidents of violent disorder. 7 other people are facing charges, including assault and public order offences. Sivens was given bail by Judge Nina Tempia until his trial on March the 31st next year at City of London Magistrates Court. Work down to sewer collapse. A collapsed sewer 14 foot underground is the cause of emergency roadworks in West Bromwich, resulting in traffic disruption. Repairs are being carried out in Hilltop by 7 Trent Water workers between Witten Lane and New Swan Lane, Black Lake, in West Bromwich, meaning that part of the road is closed. Sandwell Council said the emergency works on Hilltop, West Bromwich, are to repair a collapse to a foul sewer that is located 4.5 metres deep below the carriageway. This has resulted in the integrity of the carriageway being compromised. 7 Trent Water commenced works to repair the sewer on September the 22nd and are currently due to complete the works by October the 17th.
This is Lauren with some stories from the Express and Star from the 3rd of October. 24/7 gym bid at old steelworks site is rejected. A plan to open a 24-hour gym in a former factory has been turned down. Sandwell Council rejected the move by D1 Gyms to open in part of the former Trident Steelworks in Albion Road, West Bromwich. The local authority's planners said the gym went against its ambition to use the former steelworks as land for employment. The 19-acre site had been earmarked for more than 740 homes in 2012, but the site remains untouched by developers. The site is earmarked as employment land in the emerging Sandwell local plan, a blueprint setting out where homes and other developments would be preferred to be built in the borough up to 2041. The heavily delayed local plan is currently being reviewed by a government planning inspector, but unlikely to meet its proposed early 2026 adoption deadline. In the report outlining the refusal, Sandwell Council said, "The development would undermine all allocations for housing and employment land within the borough, resulting in the loss of much needed available land for such uses." A statement included with the application said, "The proposed change of use represents a sustainable and community-focused development that reuses a vacant building while meeting local needs." 9 million journeys are delivered across region with schemes. Free travel schemes have helped deliver 9 million bus journeys across the West Midlands in the past 18 months. West Midlands Mayor Richard Parker announced parents will be offered free travel during half term this month to help cut the cost of keeping children occupied whilst they were off school. This is the latest scheme, which forms part of the £20 million passenger incentive programme funded by government through the Bus Service Improvement Plan. Its aim is to encourage more people to use buses. A spokesperson for Transport for West Midlands, TFWM, said 9 million individual journeys have been made on the region's buses as a result of various initiatives. These include free evening travel in the run-up to Christmas to support the nighttime economy, free travel for hospital staff, care leavers, apprentices and charities, and work with large employers to encourage staff to use buses. For the latest scheme, parents and carers can apply for a Swift travel card pre-loaded with free bus travel between Monday, October 27th and Sunday, November 2nd. Those who take up the free deal will also be offered a 25% discount on a further week's free travel. Mr. Parker said, "At a time when family budgets are stretched, I am delighted to offer a free half term on the buses. This will make it cheaper, easier and greener to take the kids out for the day, perhaps for Halloween or even a fireworks display. And whilst we do that, we are busy bringing our buses back under public control." Father and son walk 30 miles to watch the Baggies for charity. Written by Luke Powell. A father and son duo have completed a gruelling near 30-mile trek to West Bromwich Albion Stadium, raising funds for a charity supporting children with disabilities. Chris Newbold and his son Charlie set off last Friday from Chris's workplace in Telford at around 6:30 a.m., walking all the way to the Hawthorns, home of West Bromwich Albion, just in time to see their beloved Leicester City snatch a point against the Baggies. The challenge was in support of Children Today, a charity that provides disabled children with access to specialist equipment. Chris was inspired to take on the walk after Children Today was chosen as Charity of the Year for 2024 by his employer, Associated Telecom. Despite the physical strain, particularly for Chris, who has plantar fasciitis that causes intense foot pain when standing or walking for long periods, the pair exceeded their original £1,000 fundraising target, raising more than £1,600. Chris admitted, "I'm well known amongst my friends and family for being not very active, so this was a huge challenge for me. I'm carrying a bit of extra weight and could do with getting more exercise, and I also suffer from plantar fasciitis, which makes walking painful. But compared to the daily challenges that many children face, this is nothing. I want to push myself whilst making a real difference. Children Today makes an incredible difference to the lives of disabled children in this region and right across the country. I may be doing this partly for self-satisfaction, but the real reason is to raise as much money as possible for children who truly need it." Funds raised will help Children Today provide equipment such as adapted trikes, specialist car seats and powered wheelchairs to children across the UK. Emma Prescott, charity director at Children Today, praised the pair's efforts. On behalf of all the children and families we support, we'd like to say a huge thank you to Chris for taking on this exciting challenge to raise vital funds for disabled children. It's wonderful to see him step outside his comfort zone and channel his passion for Leicester City FC into something that will make such a difference. As a small charity, challenges like these really do have a big impact. The funds Chris and Charlie have raised could help fund a specialist buggy, a piece of equipment that can change, that can be a lifeline for a family raising a child with a disability, giving them the freedom to get out and about together and create precious memories. Alongside this article is a picture of Chris and his son. I'm guessing that this is about halfway through their walk and they're both sat on a garden wall. They both are wearing neon yellow tops that say Children Today on them in blue writing. Charlie, his son, is sat on the wall wearing black shorts, the yellow top, a black wristband. He is giving a thumbs up to the camera and smiling. Chris is taking the picture like a selfie. He has no hair, is bald, is smiling, and is also giving a thumbs up. It's captioned, Chris Newbold and son Charlie walked from Telford to the Hawthorns.
Hello, this is Subject with your news from the Express and Star, dated Saturday, the 4th of October. Food hygiene scores served to give potential customers idea of standards. Over a dozen establishments across the West Midlands have been handed new food hygiene ratings in the latest round of inspections. The ratings are designed to give potential customers an idea of the hygiene standards, with a rating of 5 being the best possible result. A score of 5 is considered very good, 4 good, 3 generally satisfactory, 2 some improvement necessary, 1 major improvement necessary, and 0 urgent improvement required. The latest ratings are for Sandwell, 1 star rating, the New Inn at New Inn 90 Oldbury Road, Rowley Regis, rated on August 18, 4 star rating, Hot Stuff Pizza at 269 Walsall Road, West Bromwich, rated on August 15, 0-star rating, Bearwood Pizza at 609 Bearwood Road, Smethwick, rated on August 18. Inquest finds shortcomings before woman choked to death. Hospital told to provide prevention of future deaths report to show trust's learnings. By Daniel Walton. A coroner has concluded there were shortcomings in the Midland Metropolitan University Hospital's care leading up to the death of an elderly patient who died after choking on food. An inquest into the death of Rashida Sultana, aged 76 and from Handsworth, Birmingham, at the hospital in Smethwick, heard there were failings in her care. The inquest was held at the Black Country Coroner's Court in Oldbury on Wednesday and Thursday and heard about the death of Mrs. Sultana, a doting mother of 6, at the hospital on November 20 last year, only a month after it opened. 9 witnesses gave evidence over the course of the inquest, including members of the nursing team, doctors and physicians. The proceedings focused on the Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust's handling of choking policies, as well as its guidelines relating to how Do Not Attempt Resuscitation, known as DNAR, procedures are applied. Mrs. Sultana, who was registered as DNAR, had suddenly started choking after eating from a bag of chips that her daughters had purchased for her while she was being treated on Ward A9. She had been admitted to the hospital 2 days prior, after her family feared she had had a stroke. While eating and drinking water, Mrs. Sultana had suddenly begun coughing. The inquest heard how staff nurse Mr. Sifo Dube began administering anti-choking techniques to clear her airways, which included checking her breathing, performing abdominal thrusts, the Heimlich manoeuvre, and applying suction. After the food did not become dislodged, Mr. Dubé paged the on-call doctor, Dr. Meinl Huber. However, he was busy with another patient at the time, leading to Mr. Dubé to call for an emergency medical resuscitation team known as EMRT. By the time they arrived, Mrs. Sultana had died, with the inquest officially registering the cause of her death as asphyxiation, heart failure and dementia. Black Country Senior Coroner Mr. Zafar Siddiqui concluded that shortcomings and failings in the trust's services were evident in the lead up to Mrs. Sultana's death, with his main concerns falling on the clinical staff's understanding of EMRT procedures in relation to patients registered as DNAR. The concerns relate to how nursing staff showed confusion on whether they should alert the on-call doctor first or if they should call the EMRT after having previously been talked to about calling for an EMRT for patients registered as DNAR. Counsel for Mrs. Sultana's family, Mr. Gold, told the inquest the confusion was likely to have caused a delay in Mrs. Sultana receiving help from responding teams. A representative for the trust said the hospital had since provided additional training around EMRT and DNAR procedures in relation to the confusion. Mr. Siddiqui ordered the hospital to provide a prevention of future deaths report to show the trust's learnings from the incident. Addressing Mrs. Sultana's family, Mr. Siddiqui said, "I hope that these proceedings have given you some answers. I'm so sorry for your loss." It's bouquet! Comedy star Patricia Routledge captured Heart of Nation as TV's Hyacinth. Much-loved British actress Dame Patricia Routledge has died at the age of 96. She will always be remembered as a household name with her hilarious performances as the unspeakably snobbish Hyacinth Bucket in the TV hit Keeping Up Appearances. The show, which captivated audiences in the 1990s, attracted as many as 13 million viewers at its peak. Fan mail included letters from boys as young as 8 who were delighted to see a bossy woman meet her comeuppance, as she put it. But her versatility, a word she did not relish because it implied, she said, not being very good at anything, took her career far beyond the range of TV sitcoms. She appeared in Shakespeare, and at the age of 66, she played a pensioner turned detective, Hetty Wainthrop, in a £3 million 6-part BBC TV crime series. Catherine Patricia Routledge was born on February 17, 1929. She was educated at Birkenhead High School, the University of Liverpool, Bristol Old Vic Theatre School, and the Guildhall School of Music. As a youngster, she was undecided between the careers of actress, singer, or teacher. But she failed to win a scholarship to the Royal Manchester School of Music, so gave up on the idea of a singing career. Although she studied English at Liverpool University and still intended to become a teacher, she said she felt the tuggings of the stage. She was taken on as an unpaid assistant stage manager by Liverpool Playhouse, and after some months, she was offered a job with the company at £5 a week, making her theatre debut in 1952 as Hippolyta in A Midsummer Night's Dream. The young actress made her debut on a London stage in 1954. Dame Patricia quickly established herself as a major character actress, and she became known as the female Stan Laurel. But up to the 1970s, she was, if anything, better known on Broadway than in the UK. She overwhelmed the New York critics with her Broadway performance in the play How's the World Treating You?, and appeared there in musicals as well. Dame Patricia was awarded an OBE in 1993, a CBE in 2004, and was made a Dame in the 2017 New Year Honours. Royal Navy veteran left with damaged window for 5 months, by Deborah Hardiman, chief reporter. There is a picture of Barry Williams, who says he's waited 5 months for a minor council house window repair that he was charged for. A grandfather has been waiting 5 months for a broken window to be fixed by a social housing landlord, which has already billed him for the repair. Royal Navy veteran Barry Williams, aged 80, said he believed that the damage to the double glazed window at his rented home in Winchester Road in West Bromwich was caused by an air pistol, as only the external pane shattered. The retired driver said after reporting the damage in May, he was then billed for the £146 repair by the landlord Riverside Group, which has not yet been carried out. However, Riverside has apologised for the delay and denied that the father of four was put into rent arrears as a result of its action. Mr. Williams, a widower, said, "I'm not very happy about the length of time it is taking to fix my window. I've been waiting since the beginning of May for what is a minor repair job, but the thing that has really upset me is the fact that Riverside has charged me £146 to replace the glass. I've had to pay an extra sum plus the rent. I don't think I should have had even been asked to pay because it was broken through no fault of mine. It's not my property and I'm a pensioner. If I was the owner, fair enough, but I'm not. I think somebody shot at the window with some sort of air gun because the glass on the outside is broken, but the inside pane is still intact. It is ridiculous. I have spoken to the housing officer in West Bromwich, and they said someone's coming this week to do the repair. Hopefully they'll turn up this time, because 6 times they have promised to come and they haven't arrived." A statement from Riverside read, "We are sorry to hear Mr. Williams has been upset by how a matter affecting his home has been handled. He first contacted us on May 10 to report a damaged window, which he believed had been caused by a bird strike. In line with our standard process, our customer services team advised that a repair recharge would be raised. During our initial visit in May, we made his home safe by removing the broken glass and boarding up the window. Our income management officer also spoke with Mr. Williams on May 21 to discuss the recharge in more detail. We acknowledge there have been delays in completing the repair, including difficulties gaining access and an error by our contractor in fitting clear glass with a vinyl sheet instead of the correct obscure glass. However, we've ensured the property remains safe throughout. The correct glass was scheduled to be fitted yesterday, and the statement said Mr. Williams would not be charged for the follow-up work." The statement added, "This is the first time we've been made aware of a possible air gun incident. We take such matters seriously and contacted Mr. Williams on Wednesday to confirm that if he provides a crime reference number, we will cancel the remaining charge and refund any payments made. We apologise for any inconvenience caused." Sites Star in Murder Mystery, by Dominic Robertson. A new Channel 5 drama, Murder Before Evensong, starts next week with The Region taking a starring role. There are a few pictures of Amit Shah and Matthew Lewis during the filming in Bridgnorth. There is another picture of Harry Potter star Matthew Lewis, who was spotted on set. There is a picture of Matthew Lewis and Amit Shah during the filming of Murder Before Evensong at Cummer Woods. the picture of filming at the former police station in Stourbridge, and former Express and Star offices, which were also used. The 6-part murder mystery, based on the Sunday Times best-selling debut novel by Reverend Richard Coles, stars Matthew Lewis, who played Neville Longbottom in the Harry Potter films, as Canon Daniel Clement, a country rector drawn into a chilling murder investigation. The show filmed scenes at the former headquarters of the Express and Star in Queen Street, Wolverhampton. Other scenes were recorded at the former police station at Mary Stevens Park, Stourbridge. And over the border, Shropshire has provided a perfect backdrop for the show too, with filming taking place in Bridge North in February of this year and at Dudmaston Hall. The first episode is due to air at 9 p.m. on Tuesday, October 7 on Channel 5. Filming at Dudmaston was supported by the West Midlands Production Fund and forms part of Channel 5's and Acorn TV's commitment to showcasing the character and beauty of the UK's regions on screen. Speaking about the production, Dudmaston Hall's property operations manager, Gow Gibson, said, "We were delighted to welcome the cast and crew of Murder Before Evensong to Dudmaston earlier this year. The hall's history and our atmospheric woodland made it the perfect setting for this intriguing new drama, and we can't wait for audiences to see this special place on screen." Traders, "I just hope they can get the repairs done quickly." Shopkeepers say emergency sewer work having impact on business and traffic. By Paul Jenkins. Work to repair a collapsed sewer in West Bromwich is causing headaches for businesses and disruption for motorists and bus passengers. Repairs are being carried out on the sewer 14 foot underground in Hilltop by Severn Trent Water workers between Witten Lane and New Swan Lake, Black Lake in West Bromwich, meaning that part of the road is closed. It has resulted in traffic disruption and bus services being diverted. They include the popular National Express West Midlands 79 bus service, which runs from Wolverhampton to the town via Bilston, Dalston and Wensbury. The work is slated to be completed by October 17, but some businesses and people who use the busy route for shopping said it can't come soon enough. George Pitsilos, who runs the Hilltop Fish Bar, said business was down since the roadwork started on September 22. He said, "I understand it was an emergency and we couldn't be given much notice, but trade has noticeably declined since it started. It used to be a very busy route, but now cars aren't allowed through, though some of them chance it. But we used to rely on motorists for much of our custom, particularly in the afternoon. I just hope they can get the work done quickly and get the road reopened." Bus passengers have also been put off by the diversion and extra time it is taking on their route. This is a very popular shopping area. With the library here as well, it is usually bustling. Shopper Shamina Chowdhury said she couldn't believe how quiet the area was since the work started. She said, "All the shops are reporting fallen trade, or the ones I use anyway. Times are hard enough as it is, but I guess the work has to be done. I just hope the work will be completed soon." A spokesperson for utility operator Severn Trent Water, which is responsible for sewer pipes, said, "We're sorry for the disruption caused on Hilltop in West Bromwich, where we have a team making an emergency repair to a sewer pipe. Due to the location of the repair and to keep our teams and road users safe, a road closure will be in place for the duration of the works. We'd like to assure everyone that we'll be working as quickly as possible to reopen the road and have everything back to normal." A statement from Sandwell Council said, "The emergency works on Hilltop West Bromwich are to repair a collapse to a foul sewer that is located 4.5 metres deep below the carriageway. This has resulted in the integrity of the carriageway being compromised. Severn Trent Water commenced works to repair the sewer and return the carriageway to a safe condition on September 22 and are currently due to complete the works by October 17. Towards West Bromwich, bus service 79 is running via Holloway Bank, Witton Lane, Jowett's Lane, Clark's Lane, Heath Lane, Vicarage Road, Church Lane and Old Meeting Street and vice versa during the work.
Hello, this is Jenny. I hope this finds you well. The following articles are from the Express and Star newspaper, Monday the 6th of October. Reform UK to contest every ward in borough in the next year's elections. Reform UK has revealed the party will field candidates in every Sandwell and Dudley seat in next May's local elections. Nigel Farage's party has targeted the Black Country as a bellwether region for the entire country ahead of the next general election. Reform UK's West Midlands director, Pete Donnell, told the Express and Star, "I'm pleased to announce that we've boosted our Black Country team to cater for the incredible momentum behind Reform UK, as we consistently top every national opinion poll. We will be aiming to take control of councils right across the West Midlands region in 2026, just as we did in the county council elections held earlier this year." Former leader of the Sandwell Conservatives, Ray Nock, joined Reform UK during its inception in 2019 and immediately set about building its membership and enlisting future candidates. Mr. Nock's first victory for the party was when he led a successful campaign in February 2023, when he pressured Sandwell Council to reverse its planning cuts to the West Bromwich-based Shop Mobility Service for the Disabled. Mr. Nock will coordinate the Sandwell campaign, supported by Jack Sabowal in Tipton and Wednesbury and Mike Cooper in Smethwick. Former West Bromwich councillor Ray said, "This is an exciting time for Reform UK and it is the culmination of a lot of hard work since the party formed in 2018. We will be fielding candidates in every Sandwell ward. The response from our membership at our monthly meetings has been phenomenal, and the calibre of the team we're fielding to fix this council is first class." In Dudley, former Conservative MP Marco Longhi will be coordinating Reform UK's candidates to contest every Dudley, Stourbridge and Hales Owen seat. The latest YouGov poll, published on September the 26th, projected Reform UK winning West Bromwich and Tipton and Wednesbury parliamentary seats if a general election was held now, with Labour remaining in control of Smethwick. Whereas the parliamentary seats in Dudley, Hales Owen and Stourbridge all would swing from Labour to Reform UK if an instant general election was held. Last month, the party gained a foothold in Walsall Council after winning the Pelsall by-election. Insect discovery could help modern surgery, scientists. Remarkable cutting mechanism could benefit surgeons, research finds. An article by Neil Poran, Press Association. A remarkable discovery about a wasp-like insect's mechanism for cutting into plants could have implications for modern surgery, scientists say. Researchers at Heriot-Watt University examined how female sawflies make such specific cuts when planting their eggs into plants. They found that sawflies' egg-laying organ, called an ovipositor, acts like a biological reciprocating saw which instinctively knows when to cut and when to push material aside. The female sawflies must avoid killing the plants when laying their eggs, and a peer-reviewed study found they showed a natural selectivity in which material to cut, avoiding damage to the plant structure. Dr. Verdigere Malakui said, "We've discovered something remarkable, a cutting mechanism that essentially thinks for itself. The sawfly's egg-laying organ can cut through soft plant tissue but automatically avoids the plant's tough internal plumbing, including the tubes that carry water and nutrients. This ensures the plant survives and serves as a food supply for the larva coming from the eggs. The research team scaled up the sawfly's cutting mechanism 400 times and tested it on material which mimics human tissue. They found the system operated on a similar ultimate stress threshold, displacing the parts below this threshold. Professor Mark Demoulas said, "This discovery has profound potential implications for surgery practice. A surgical instrument based on this natural mechanism could instinctively avoid critical tissues while cutting precisely where it is needed, essentially giving surgeons a tool that helps prevent mistakes. Further input is now needed from surgeons, but this new discovered mechanism has tantalising prospects." Millions now face higher energy bills after a new price cap increase. In a nutshell, the typical annual energy bill has increased from £1,720 to £1,755, just as cooler temperatures are driving up heating use. The source for that is Google Gemini. Millions of households are now paying more for their gas and electricity after the energy price cap rose by 2% on October the 1st. The increase means the annual household bill for a household paying by direct debit has gone up from £1,720 to £1,755, just as colder weather pushes many to switch on their heating. Debt charity Step Change said the £35 a year rise may seem modest, but warned it comes against a backdrop of mounting arrears. The group has recorded a 32% increase in average energy debts among its clients over the past 2 years. Simon Trevithick, head of communications at Step Change, said, "Not only are people now having to switch on their heating as the weather turns colder, but bills have just gone up this month, which is another blow to household finances. Energy arrears are the most common type of debt across household bills that we see at Step Change, and people have had little respite from steep costs across the past 3 years. Consumer group Which said households concerned about rising bills should consider whether there are fixed rate deals available that undercut the current price cap. Emily Seymour, Which Energy editor, said, "As we head into the colder months, many households will be worried that the energy price cap has gone up by 2%. There are several deals on the market for lower than the price cap, so now is a good time to shop around if you're looking to fix. As a rule of thumb, we'd recommend looking for deals cheaper than the current price cap, not longer than 12 months and without significant exit fees." Price comparison site Uswitch calculated that the average home on a standard tariff will now spend around £140 on energy in October, compared with £63 in September, reflecting both higher rates and greater seasonal use. The increase has come despite wholesale prices falling by 2% in the 3 months leading up to Ofgem's latest price cap decision. Standing charges, the daily fees paid to energy supplied, have also gone up, rising by 4% for electricity and 14% for gas, or 7p a day, largely due to the government's expansion of the Warm Home Discount Scheme. Around 2.7 million more low-income households, including 90,000 families with children, are now eligible for the £150 discount this winter, after the government removed the hard-to-heat eligibility criteria. In total, 6.1 million households will benefit. Ofgem said the cap reflects higher electricity balancing costs incurred by network operators to maintain a stable supply, which will add around £1.23 a month to the average bill. Energy Consumers Minister Martin McCluskey said the government was acting to support vulnerable families. "We are expanding the £150 warm home discount to more than 6 million families, which helps one in five households with their energy bills," he said. In the coming weeks, we will be announcing details of the biggest home upgrade programme in British history to improve up to 5 million homes, making them cheaper and cleaner to run. Wholesale gas costs remain 75% above their levels before Russia invaded Ukraine. Mr. McCluskey added, "The more renewables on the system, the cheaper the wholesale price of electricity." Inspector throws out appeal over refusal to turn industrial unit into a club. A government inspector has rejected an appeal over refusal of plans to convert a unit on an industrial estate into a club. Samwell Council refused to convert the unit in Willow Court of Crystal Drive, Smethwick, into the Capri Bar and Lounge, saying it would be incompatible with its neighbours. But applicant Carlos Douglas's appeal to government planning inspectors was also thrown out. The proposed opening hours were 11 a.m. to 3 a.m, Monday to Saturday, and 10:30 a.m. to midnight every Sunday, with a maximum capacity of 50 people. However, the inspector said it was unclear what the maximum capacity of the venue would be, with separate statements referring to 50 and as many as 150 people. Planning inspector Hannah Guest said, "There would be a real risk that evening events and those finishing in the early hours of the morning, especially to those accommodating close to 150 people, would result in levels of noise that would harm the living conditions of nearby residents." A statement from the applicant submitted during the appeal said, "The unit would be pre-bookable, business-orientated, multi-use space for events such as corporate training and conferencing, religious gatherings, small-scale and community celebrations, civic functions, training and educational programmes, and family gatherings." Tramlink delay until next year. Months later, now passengers likely to have to wait until 2026 for services. An article by Mark Andrews. A long-awaited new tramline from Wensbury to Dudley may not be open to passengers until next year. The 5-mile tramline was due to have opened last year, but rising costs led to the opening date being put back until autumn this year and ahead of Christmas. Now it appears likely passengers won't travel on the new link until 2026. Concerns have been growing as the work has fallen behind schedule, and Dudley Council leader, Council Patrick Harley, said he did not now expect trams to be running before Christmas. It is understood a series of meetings will be held over the next few days to decide on an opening date. Councillor Harley voiced his frustration at the delay, saying that if the scheme had been left to Dudley and Samwell councils alone, it would have been completed much more quickly. He said, "From what I've heard, the trams will be running along the tracks by Christmas, but it will not be ready to be open to the public. The route will not be allowed to carry passengers until rigorous testing programme has been carried out, and that is unlikely to be completed before the end of the year. It's just been one disaster after another, as far as I'm concerned," Councillor Harley said. "The way things are going, we could have the Dudley Interchange, bus and tram station finished before the trams are running, which is ridiculous when you think about how long the metro scheme has been going on for. The line is part of a wider scheme that was originally scheduled to run to Briley Hill Town Centre and was due to open in time for the Commonwealth Games in 2022. The project was beset by delays and funding problems, and it was decided to split the construction into phases, with the Wensbury to Dudley section now almost completed opening first. It will be followed by a second section to the Waterfront Office Park, a third stretch to Merryhill Shopping Centre, and a final phase connecting to Briley Hill Town Centre."
Hello, this is Pam with some articles from the Express and Star, Tuesday the 7th of October. Supermarket groceries can cost you twice as much when ordered through delivery apps. Consumers who order groceries through delivery apps could be paying twice as much for some items, a watchdog has warned. Which found that shoppers who ordered everyday supermarket essentials from Deliveroo, Just Eat or Uber Eats could be paying at least 20% more, with some items more than double the price. The consumer group compared the prices of up to 50 popular grocery items from four supermarkets, Asda, Morrisons, Sainsbury's and Waitrose, against the three food delivery apps, which also checked Tesco's Whoosh same-day home delivery service to see prices compared with buying directly from the supermarket. On average, Which found that Sainsbury's Nectar members had the most to lose by using a delivery app to fast-track their food shopping, as the supermarket does not apply its loyalty card discounts to delivery apps. Members of the Sainsbury's loyalty scheme would see the biggest markup with Uber Eats, where they would pay an average 45% more. They would see a 41% increase with Deliveroo and 40% with Just Eat, compared with shopping in-store with their loyalty card. Bird's Eye Codfish Fingers, 280 grams, were £3 with the Nectar card, but £6.25 through all delivery sites. Corn Chicken Nuggets, 300 grams, were £1.75 for Nectar card holders, but £3.50 through the delivery sites. The differences were less marked for those without a Nectar card, with customers paying 25% more at Uber Eats, 23% more at Deliveroo, and 22% more at Just Eat. Which's analysis showed that people shopping at Waitrose could be paying a third more by shopping through Uber Eats instead of directly with the supermarket. The markup was less, although still significant, at Just Eat, 30%, and Deliveroo, 25%. Two products were consistently double the price of buying directly at Waitrose. Pampers new baby nappies, size 3, 40-pack, were £12 through Just Eat and Uber Eats, but £6 at the supermarket. And Tilda microwave basmati rice was £2 from Deliveroo, Just Eat and Uber Eats, but £1 in store. Shoppers buying from Morrisons through Deliveroo and Uber Eats were likely to find a similar markup compared with buying directly at the supermarket, both 28%, while Just Eat was 26% more. On one of the days checked by Which, it found Just Eat price matched Asda, so the average price difference was lower than overall. However, the markup of Asda groceries at Just Eat was still an average of 19%. Officer in pursuit tells inquest all factors were considered. Police inspector gives evidence at opening of inquest into death of teenage driver by Paul Jenkins. The police officer who initiated a chase which ended with the death of an Oldbury teenager said he considered all factors when deciding to pursue the car he was driving. Benjamin Hopton, aged 17, was killed when the Honda he was driving failed to stop for police and hit a tree on Coombs Road near the junction with Amberway, Haleshowen. The crash happened around 3:15 a.m. on January the 5th last year, with Mr. Hopton of Princess Road in Oldbury declared dead at the scene and two passengers taken to hospital. The first day of the full inquest at Sandwell Coroner's Court in front of a jury heard evidence from Inspector Matthew Walker, who started to pursue the vehicle when he saw it bunny hop and then stall at Britannia Road in Rowley Regis. Inspector Walker, who has been a police officer for 28 years and is fully trained in tactical pursuit and advanced driving, was on a special operation looking at keyless and car key burglaries and had intelligence about a Mercedes that had been using the owner's tracking device. Although based just over the border in Staffordshire, he went to a car park in Rowley Regis and found the Mercedes, then saw a Honda car with three people in it. He told the inquest, "Something triggered at the back of my mind that there was a call out to look out for a Honda vehicle, and I thought it may have had something to do with the Mercedes. The Honda was being driven normally until it reached some traffic lights where it stopped in a jilted motion and stalled. This led me to think the driver may not be experienced enough to handle the car, and the fact there were three people in the car in the early hours of the morning, plus the thought that it might be a suspect vehicle, led me to gesture at the driver to stop." The inquest heard the car accelerated away and Inspector Walker, who was in a single crew, radioed to colleagues in the West Midlands Force to take the lead in the pursuit, though he followed behind. The pursuit was short and ended when the car hit a tree while going down a hill on Coombs Road, which Inspector Walker witnessed. Representing Mr. Hopton's family, Christian Weaver questioned Inspector Walker on what made him decide to pursue the Honda when he had already checked with a colleague about whether there was an alert for such a car and received the answer, "Not that I know to." Mr. Weaver said, "The phrase in the back of my mind suggests you weren't sure whether it was stolen or suspect." But Inspector Walker said, "It was always my intention to stop the car, which I tried to do, and then I ended up pursuing it as the driver accelerated away. It all happened fast, and in that situation you have to make a dynamic judgment, but that judgment took all the factors into consideration." The inquest, which is expected to last until Friday, earlier heard evidence Mr. Hopton was driving on a provisional licence. Mr. Hopton's mother, Carol, who was present at the inquest with five other family members, said she missed Benjamin every day, in particular his big smile. Comic is named as winner of major award at Comedy Festival by James Vukmarovich. Sandwell comic Ryan S. Lewis has been announced as winner of the prestigious Birmingham Comedy Festival Breaking Talent Award 2025. Ryan was presented with his award on Friday at a packed glee club by black country comedian and broadcaster Darren Harriott. Ryan, who comes from Smethwick, said he recognised the power of humour from an early age after quoting a popular Sesame Street character. He said, "When I was 5 years old, I made a good friend laugh by quoting Elmo. I wanted to be a clown. Then, at seven, I saw I Spy with Eddie Murphy. After discovering that he was a comedian, I decided I need to do that and then procrastinated for 20 years, eventually making his stand-up debut at the Hollybush in Cradleheath in 2022. Ryan has gone on to appear at numerous comedy nights around the region, including Shams Azam's Project Mayhem. After collecting his trophy, the Mug of Victory, he acknowledged his drive to perform as much as possible had given him essential experience in front of diverse audiences, allowing him to test and hone his material. He said, "This award is a testament to all those late nights travelling to gigs, trying out material. It's a benchmark in my career, and this is a stamp that tells me to keep going, so watch this space." The awards judging panel, who included Darren Harriott, the Glee Club's founder Mark Toogan, and a representative from the Comedy Festival, commended Ryan for his commanding presence, energy, and ability to engage the audience with a set that saw him tap into his upbringing and discuss his Jamaican grandfather and relationship with his mother with warmth and humour. Joining Ryan on stage were the awards regular MC James Cook, special guest Josh Pugh, who closed the night, and four other shortlisted acts from the West Midlands. Among the finalists were character comic Abby Hale from Bilston, who led the audience through a game of Pass the Parcel, and sketch duo Bab, aka Amy Spinks and Lauren Soley from Dudley, who appeared as a ukulele-playing singing duo and struggled with a life modelling class. A spokesman for Birmingham Comedy Festival said, "Despite the considerable strengths of all the acts shortlisted for the award, probably one of the most diverse we've had in terms of style for a long time, and Ryan shined, delivering an accomplished and competent set that kept the energy high. He never missed a beat. We wish him the very best over the coming months and can't wait to see what he does next." Co-op milestone of 560,000 staff volunteer hours. The Mid-Counties Cooperative has reached a major milestone with colleagues contributing more than 560,000 hours of volunteering over the past two decades. This week marks the 20th anniversary of the Society from its beginnings in 2005, a chance to reflect on the member-owned cooperative's growth and successes over the past 20 years in partnership with its members and colleagues. From helping at food banks to supporting local schools, youth groups and charities, the scale of the colleagues' volunteering reflects the Society's long-standing commitment to doing good together to create a fairer, ethical and more sustainable future. Over the same period, its membership has grown from 189,000 to more than 758,000 people. Alongside volunteering, the Society has donated more than £5.4 million to community causes, with members helping to decide where support is needed most within their local community. In the last year alone, its Doing Good Together fund has channeled over £200,000 to more than 680 groups, from schools and theatre groups to food banks and mental health charities. Further long-term initiatives include the Fairer Futures programme, which launched in 2023 to support young people facing complex barriers to employment within Walsall. Behind the headlines, Smooth Criminal, the rise of the middle-class shoplifter. High-end shops are targeted for the thrill of it, say police. There's a new breed of shoplifter in town, police around the UK have warned, but they're not what you might expect. Middle-class shoplifters are increasingly targeting high-end shops for the thrill of it in some of our richest cities. Police this week released CCTV footage of thieves targeting John Lewis in Cambridge, but it's not a problem that's limited to the historic university city. The video shows a mother-daughter pair caught taking their time in three-floor department store and hiding clothes in handbags. Another clip shows a brazen woman dropping perfume into an already full shopping bag. Police say these offenders targeting high-end stores are stealing for the thrill of it. Cambridge, home to one of the best universities in the world, is one of the UK's richest cities. The county as a whole saw a 22% increase this year in shoplifting compared to 2024. PC Emily Jane Matthews said a huge bulk of thefts in Cambridge were by the older, middle class with nice houses. She runs a Facebook campaign called Wanted Wednesdays, where she posts images of suspects, and many turn themselves in for fear of being exposed. Caught shoplifters have to pay for the items, receive a lifetime ban from the shop, and must apologise in person. PC Matthews said, "These aren't people stealing out of necessity, they're people in professional jobs taking high-end items like clothing and perfume simply for the thrill. I've had one suspect in interview when she was banned from John Lewis and Waitrose say, 'Where am I going to get my weekly food shop?' The embarrassment is often the strongest deterrent." In July, the then Policing and Crime Minister, Dame Diana Johnson, claimed middle-class shoplifters were responsible for pushing up prices on the high street. The increasing trend has been put down to the ease of self-checkouts and a feeling of being owed something. It's not an entirely new phenomenon, however. Back in 2023, the chairman of M&S, Archie Norman, put the rise in shoplifting down in part to well-heeled consumers stealing things while going through self-checkouts. He told LBC's podcast, Money with David Buick and Michael Wilson, it was too easy to blame the cost of living crisis for the rise in thefts from shops. Some of it is by gangs or people stealing to fuel a drugs habit, he said. No doubt, that's probably increased a bit. It's always been there. Then you get the sort of middle class. With the reduction of service you get in a lot of shops, a lot of people go in and think, well, this didn't scan, or it's very difficult to scan these things through, and I shop here all the time. It's not my fault. I'm owed it. So you see, with the self-checkouts, just a bit of that creeping in. In many instances, thieves target luxury food items such as expensive steaks to keep up with their lifestyle, paying for some items but walking off with others. John Noosebaum, Director of Service Retail at Kingdom Security, told Talking Retail that organic food stores were also being targeted, with some smaller shops with less CCTV and security struggling to cope. He said convenience stores near train stations had also seen the effects, with commuters using self-checkouts for stealing meal deals or snacks for the train, or just walking out with food. According to the British Retail Consortium, we're now in the middle of a shoplifting phenomenon, as shop thefts reach an all-time high with over 20 million incidents in 2023-24, costing retailers £2.2 billion. And where the cost of living crisis has forced some people to take drastic measures to feed their families, others simply do it for kicks. Emmeline Taylor, Professor of Criminology at City, University of London, told Woman and Home magazine, "Why affluent people are compelled to steal fascinates me. In 2016, I came up with the acronym SWIPERS to describe well-heeled shoplifters. This demographic would never steal in an overt way, and they don't steal enough to warrant arrest. They steal by accident, or so they tell themselves, and if caught, it's what they tell the security guard too. They appear honest, they might be well-dressed, and they steal frequently, knowing they can get away with it because people believe them when they play ignorant."
Virtual coffee and conversation invitation each Wednesday from 12 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. Weekly virtual coffee and a chat using Zoom. You will need a device that can connect to the internet, such as a smartphone, tablet or computer with a microphone. Most laptop computers have a built-in microphone and camera, or you may have a webcam already set up. It will be first come, first served. So would you please indicate if you will be attending by contacting SVI by emailing info@sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk. A Zoom meeting invitation will be sent to the first 8 people who respond. Please note, if you have been part of the conversation previously, you will still have to respond confirming you wish to participate, as a fresh invite is produced for every session. We will also include links for you to download the Zoom app to your devices for both Android and iOS users on your first time of participating. If you don't get through this time, don't worry. You will be added to the next coffee and conversation meeting. Telephone 0121 525 4810. Email info@sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk.
When you asked to receive recordings produced by the Sandwell Talking News, you gave your name and address so that we could send you our memory sticks or CDs. This information is stored in a secure database, and address labels are also stored in a secure location. Having left our premises, the address labels and postal wallets are then under the protection and care of Royal Mail. Your contact details are only used for sending you our memory sticks or CDs, and will never be forwarded to a third party. If you ask us to stop sending Sandwell Talking News to you, your contact details will be deleted from our database and your address labels will be permanently destroyed. We promise and assure you that we take data protection seriously and make every effort to meet the requirements of the Data Protection Act. If your circumstances do change, you move home, change your phone number, or wish to unsubscribe to the Sandwell Talking News, please call the office on 0121 525 4810 or email sandwelltn@gmail.com so that we can make the necessary changes.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week, along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, now for a selection of the audio described TV programmes for the week starting Saturday 11th of October and ending Friday the 17th of October, compiled by Sarah and read by Diane. So, let's see what delights there are for you on Saturday. In the morning, you can start with Rick Stein's Cornwall on BBC One or Kevin's Big Farming Adventure on BBC Two, both at 11:30 a.m. In the afternoon, try DIY SOS on BBC One at 3:15 or Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It on Channel 4 at 4:25. If you fancy a laugh, Robin Williams stars in the iconic adventure comedy Jumanji on ITV at 4:10. Early evening on the Beeb is dominated by Strictly Come Dancing from 6 p.m. Over on ITV at 6:40, there's the Chase Celebrity Special, when a range of well and lesser known celebrities take on the challenge for charity. At 8 on Channel 4, there's Great British Journeys from Above, starting in the Scottish Highlands. If you're a film lover, choose from the police drama The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent with Nicolas Cage on Channel 4 at 9, followed at 11:10 by Le Mans 66, also on Channel 4. For sheer daftness, head over to BBC One at 10:35 for Ghostbusters Afterlife. Now on to Sunday. Late morning, you can choose between Bakewell Tart on Nadia's British Food Adventure on BBC Two at 11:30 or Fern Britain Inside the Vets on ITV at the same time. Afternoon films include The Bond Adventure at 1:15pm on ITV with The Living Daylights or Wallace and Gromit The Curse of the Were-Rabbit on BBC One at 2:15 or finally Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire on ITV at 3:45. Early evening, there's Hidden Wild Isles on BBC One at 6:15 when wildlife cameraman Hamza Yassin reveals hidden natural spectacles. There are more documentaries on Channel 4 with Hotel Chocolat at 6:55, followed by the endearing Educating Yorkshire. This week, Year 7 student Lottie is coming to terms with the loss of sight in one of her eyes. There are the Strictly results on BBC One at 7:15pm, followed by a new drama, Riot Women, at 9. ITV also have a new series at 9, Frauds, or for real-life drama, there's a new series of Hunted on Channel 4, also at 9. Before we move on to Monday, here are the programmes which are on at the same time and same channel each weekday. BBC One has Homes Under the Hammer at 11:30, The Repair Shop at 3:45 and Lost and Found in the Lakes at 2:30, with the exception of Friday when it's Escape to the Country instead. BBC Two has Trawler Men Hunting the Catch at 4:15 each day except Monday. On ITV, it's Dickinson's Deal each weekday at 2pm, and on Channel 4, there's Find It, Fix It, Flog It at 10 past 4. The soaps are as follows this week. On Monday, it's EastEnders on BBC One at 7:30, then Emmerdale and Coronation Street on ITV at 7:30 and 8. On Tuesday, it's just EastEnders on BBC One at 7:30 because ITV are showing international football at 7, Latvia versus England. Wednesday, it's back to the full complement of EastEnders and Emmerdale at 7:30 and Coronation Street at 8. Thursday, it's just EastEnders and Emmerdale at 7:30 and on Friday, there's no EastEnders, so it's Emmerdale at 7:30, followed by Corrie at 8. Now on to Monday. If you're a regular flyer, you might or might not want to watch Why Planes Crash on BBC One at 8, which explores why 4 planes have crashed in 6 months. Also at 8, but over on Channel 4, a dispatches reporter goes undercover in a 999 control room to reveal the truth about overstretched ambulance services. This is 999 Undercover, NHS in Crisis. There's a choice of drama at 9pm with police series Blue Lights on BBC One, set in Belfast, and Frauds continues on ITV, set in Spain. There's also the second episode of real-life thriller Hunted on Channel 4. Round your day off on BBC Two with Kunk on Earth when she looks at revolutions, including the American one. Now for Tuesday, which is a bit thin on the ground in terms of choice. It's Meringue Week on the Great British Bake Off at 8 on Channel 4, followed by the travel game show Worlds Apart, where unlikely duos begin to bond as the treasure hunt brings them to Kyoto in Japan. At 9 on BBC One, the school-based drama Waterloo Road continues with another episode after the 10 o'clock news. If you fancy a late film, you can choose from Action Fantasy on ITV at 10:50 with The Dark Knight or William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet on BBC One at 11:40. Your delights for Wednesday are as follows. BBC Two kicks off early evening viewing with The Repair Shop at 8 when John from Hollywell visits the barn with a working model of a Welsh coal mine. This is followed at 9 by Celebrity Traders when the drama continues to build. Over on BBC Two, Simon Reeves is on the second leg of his adventure around the northern border of the tropics in Tropic of Cancer. He visits a forgotten refugee camp in Algeria where more than 100,000 people live. This is followed at 9 by the art programme Fake or Fortune, this week focusing on a picture of a white flower which may have been painted by Dutch artist Piet Mondrian. The Fleet Street-based drama The Hack continues on ITV at 9. Or, if you prefer, there's Grand Designs over on Channel 4, this week in off-grid Pembrokeshire. This is followed by Britain's Most Expensive Houses when Rob needs help to downsize from his £15 million Sandbanks beach house. It's a hard life for some. And now for Thursday. BBC starts their evening viewing with a series of Highland Cops. This week, officers in Inverness raid County Line's drug gangs and investigate a violent knife crime. For something different but also a little bit terrifying, join the hopeful entrepreneurs in the Dragon's Den on BBC One at 8 p.m. There's plenty of choice at 9 across the channels. Celebrity Traders continues on BBC One. There's Saving Lives at Sea in World War II on BBC Two. Long Lost Family on ITV. And How I Made a Million in 90 Days on Channel 4. If you've any energy left after that, the Bond classic The Living Daylights is on ITV at 11:15. Finally, on to Friday. Start the evening with Monty Don's Spanish Gardens on BBC Two at 7. In this first of three programmes, Monty explores the vast gardens and palace at Escorial. At 9, also on BBC Two, historian Lucy Worsley explores the early life of Agatha Christie in Lucy Worsley on the Mystery Queen. Also at 9, but on ITV, the drama Borderline continues, or for a few laughs, switch over to Channel 4 for Gogglebox. To round off your evening with more comedy, stay on Channel 4 for Greg Davies' Firing Cheeseballs. The comedian, actor and Taskmaster host sets out to chronicle the issues surrounding modern life in this acclaimed debut stand-up show from 2011. Hopefully you will find something interesting and enjoyable this week.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, October 11th. And Legend, the Bruce Springsteen story, is on at 10:30 in the morning on Radio 4. In Music Matters, 400 years of the Royal Collection, anniversary of the appointment of the Master of King's Music. Radio 3, 1 o'clock. And there's drama Star of the Sea on Radio 4 on Saturday afternoon at 3. The best comedy controllers, the things that made us laugh, is on Radio 4 Extra, alternatively, at 3 p.m. While Opera on 3, Tchaikovsky's The Queen of Spades, Radio 3, 6 p.m. Saturday evening, Archive on 4, War and Peace, the UN at 80, 8 p.m, Radio 4. And Sounds of the 90s on Radio 2 at 10 o'clock, rounding off your Saturday evening. Sunday, October 12th. And there's live sport, if you're interested. Women's Football, Super League, Radio 5 Live at 10 to 12, lunchtime. Drama, Stormy Applause, memoir of the violinist of the Borodin Quartet during the time of Stalin. Radio 4 for this, 3 o'clock, Sunday afternoon. The Verb, Poetry, as a call to action on Radio 4 at 10 past 5. While Pavarotti at 90, a celebration on Classic FM at 7 p.m. The Cello and the Nightingale, the first outdoor wildlife broadcast, is on Radio 3, Sunday evening, 7:15. While the Paul Gambaccini Collection is on Radio 2 at 8 o'clock. On to programmes then that are serialised Monday to Friday, same time, same radio station, each day of the week, Monday to Friday. And Book of the Week this week, 1929, the story of the Great Crash, 11:45 every morning Radio 4. Winter Well, advice on how to survive the winter, is on Radio 4 all week at 1:45 in the afternoon. Composer of the Week, J.S. Bach, Radio 3, 4 p.m. Book at Bedtime, Helm, is on Radio 4 at 10:45 all week on Radio 4. On to the rest of the week's highlights then, starting with Monday, October 13th. Nagamon Chetty has news and interviews on Radio 5 Live at 11 a.m. Curious Cases, Vibrations, an Investigation into Resonances, Radio 4 at 3:30 on Monday afternoon. Paul Sinner's Perfect Pub Quiz is on Radio 4 in the comedy slot at 6:30, while Radio 3 in Concert has works by Elgar and Rachmaninoff. Radio 3, 7:30, Monday evening. Alternatively, some drama, An Uncommon Love, an affair between a Victoria gentleman and a maid. Radio 4 Extra, 8:30 p.m. While The Blues Show with Kerris Matthews rounds off Monday, Radio 2, 9 p.m. Tuesday, October 14th, and Classical Live, works by Britten, Mozart and Cataldi. Radio 3, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. There's drama, Talking to Chickens. Toots is living in a care home and wants more time outdoors. Radio 4, 2:15, Tuesday afternoon. History's Toughest Heroes, Kitty O'Neill, Wonder Woman, is how it's described here. Radio 4, 3 o'clock on Tuesday. While Mark Steele's in town in Wrexham. Radio 4, 6:30 p.m. in the comedy slot. I mentioned live sport earlier. There's a World Cup qualifier between England and Latvia on Radio 5 Live at 7 p.m. on Tuesday evening. While the Gorties Triangle, Archaeological Murder Mystery, alternatively on Radio 4 Extra, Tuesday evening, 8:30. As it's a Tuesday, 8:40 p.m, Radio 4, In Touch, the latest news for the blind and partially sighted. While How to Play, a rehearsal for La Traviata, on Radio 4 at 9 p.m. Alternatively, you may want to listen to The Jazz Show with Jamie Cullum, 9 o'clock, Radio 2, Tuesday night. Wednesday, October 15th, In Praise of Clichés, Radio 4 Extra at 4 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon. Radio 3 in Concert features Handel at 7:30 p.m, Radio 3. Vendetta for a Judge is the crime drama on Radio 4 Extra at 8:30 p.m. While The Folk Show with Mark Radcliffe, Radio 2, 9 o'clock, Wednesday night. Thursday, October 16th, Adrian Charles has his usual news and views on Radio 5 Live at 11 a.m. Well, there's drama, Leaving it's called, Love, Loss and Legacy, Radio 4, 2:15, Thursday afternoon. Eyes of the Buddha is a thriller set in 1972 in Sri Lanka. It's Radio 4 Extra on Thursday afternoon at 2:30. While the comedy on Radio 4 at 6:30 is Call Jonathan Pye, a bit of a take on radio phone-ins. Call Jonathan Pye, 6:30 p.m, Radio 4. While the country show on Thursday night with Bob Harris is on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. Finally, Friday, October 17th, An Antisocial, Adam Fleming looks behind an issue of the day, just after midday, on Radio 4. Limelight, The Betrayal, an Irish crime drama at 2:15 on Radio 4 on Friday afternoon. More drama, So Easy to Forget, a marriage threatened by jealousy and secrets, Radio 4 Extra at 2:30. The news quiz rounds off your week with topical comedy panel game show, 6:30 p.m, Radio 4. And Friday night is music night, and there's a celebration of Julie Andrews' 90th birthday, Radio 3, 7:30 on Friday night. That's it. Thank you to Angela for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
TNS Soundings. Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz. And this week's round, it's potatoes. Question 1. Who is mistakenly credited with introducing potatoes to Europe and Ireland in the 16th century? Question 2. The world's first potato museum began as a classroom project in 1975 in which Belgium city? Question 3. Which US state opened its own dedicated potato museum in the city of Blackfoot in 1988? Question 4. Which US president was reportedly the first to serve French fries in the White House? Question 5. Which artist painted the Potato Eaters? Question 6. Which French queen is said to have popularised the vegetable by wearing potato blossoms in her hair? Question 7. Who wrote, "In life, the universe and everything, it is a mistake to think you can solve any major problems just with potatoes"? Question 8. Who stars as the author Juliet Ashton in the 2018 film The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society? Question 9. Falstaff utters, "Let the sky rain potatoes," in which Shakespeare play? And question 10. What is the popular Irish stew made with potatoes and sausages? How's your potato knowledge? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers for the potatoes round. Question 1. Who is mistakenly credited with introducing potatoes to Europe and Ireland in the 16th century? Sir Walter Raleigh. Question 2. The world's first potato museum began as a classroom project in 1975 in which Belgium city? Brussels. Question 3. Which US state opened its own dedicated potato museum in the city of Blackfoot in 1988? Idaho. Question 4. Which US president was reportedly the first to serve French fries in the White House? Thomas Jefferson. Question 5. Which artist painted the Potato Eaters? Vincent van Gogh. Question 6. Which French queen is said to have popularised the vegetable by wearing potato blossoms in her hair? Marie Antoinette. Question 7. Who wrote, "In life, the universe and everything, it is a mistake to think you can solve any major problems just with potatoes"? Douglas Adams. Question 8. Who stars as the author Juliet Ashton in the 2018 film The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society? Lily James. Question 9. Falstaff utters, "Let the sky rain potatoes," in which Shakespeare play? The Merry Wives of Windsor. And question 10. What is the popular Irish stew made with potatoes and sausages? Coddle. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye!
BBC News, 3. Held in murder probe over body in canal. Picture. A bridge overlooks a canal in Riders Green Road, West Bromwich. There is a pavement running along the bridge with a railing, and there are double yellow lines on the road. There is a grass verge by the canal with a footpath. A cream building with green shutters stands next to the bridge on the roadside. Police said the woman's body was found in the water near Riders Green Road. 3 people have been arrested on suspicion of murder after a woman was found dead in a canal. Police said her body was found in a stretch of water near Riders Green Road in West Bromwich on Tuesday, and a post-mortem examination is being carried out to work out how she died. 2 men, one in his 60s and the other in his 20s, were taken into custody, along with a woman in her 40s. A West Midlands police spokesperson said detectives were reviewing CCTV footage and making door-to-door inquiries as part of their investigation.
DNF Soundings.
Hello, my name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm. And naturally enough, I called them Cabin Conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin Conversations about National Stress Awareness Day. On the 5th of November this year falls National Stress Awareness Day, established by the International Stress Management Association, ISMA, in 1998, officially celebrated on the first Wednesday in November. This charity organisation is the driving force behind raising public awareness of people's stressful lives and touches on many forms of stress, anxiety, unchecked emotions, mental and physical fatigue, all found in personal and professional everyday worlds. They also help devise ways in which to recognise and manage levels of stress for better well-being. According to the UK Mental Health Foundation's 2018 survey, despite circumstances for stress being common across the board for most, 30% of older people are more likely to cope better than the 18 to 24 age group, as the younger people feel more pressure to compare themselves to others. Overall, the survey reported that 74% of people were so stressed that they felt unable to cope, and this was before the COVID epidemic. However, it is not all gloom and doom. There are many organisations like ISMA and self-management techniques to reduce stress these days. Perhaps one of the easiest ways is to improve environments, be it the frequently mentioned cultural influences of society or individual spaces, such as work and home buildings. The mysterious Chinese practice of Feng Shui Weihe employs positive changes using a system of defining areas and directions to bring an unobstructive flow, qi, life force, through to a place or person, creating a universal balance. Feng Shui Weihe has specific diagrams that can suit any situation or location, and mainly comprise of the basic compass directions, natural seasons, mythical animals, including the yin and yang, chaotic give and take, celestial forces. All the time mindful of the 5 elements, metal, earth, fire, water, and wood. Minimalist homes mirror the Feng Shui Weihe philosophy, allowing room for ample flow, thus avoiding the frustration of hitting or tripping over stray things, and in turn generate a greater sense of tranquility. Of course, stress is a much more complicated problem than just the environment. How people process the effects of interactions in the world also plays a huge role in everyday life. The survival instinct for flight, freeze or fight is often mentioned in relation to stress. This is because too high levels of hormones, especially adrenaline, are triggered by high levels of stress, which could be caused by emotional fear, mental time pressures, or physical difficulties. Probably the worst is feeling helpless in such a triggering situation. This is where stepping back from the problem, taking time to think, and maybe taking a few deep breaths will assist in overcoming the immediate anxiety before it becomes bigger and harmful to health. Problems may need more input. Try talking to family, friends, or other support services. Remember the old proverb, a problem shared is a problem halved. Also in this age of technology, there are many audio self-help, relaxation, meditation, and mental health apps. Organisations can offer tips and exercises along with therapies, such as cognitive behavioural therapy, CBT. Some people find CBT really helps identify personal issues and change negative thinking patterns into positive achievable goals. Surprisingly, even the all-round tough ex-British SAS soldiers shown on the TV teach people to focus on what is needed to achieve the goal in the immediate area if becoming overwhelmed in a mission. All of us are subjected to different situations outside our comfort zone at times, which must be faced there and then for whatever critical reason. Take that stressful moment to remind yourself there are other people out there in the world dealing with this sort of thing every day and able to cope amazingly well. The human mind and body are incredibly resilient. There is a mindful quote from Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu. If you are depressed, you are living in the past. If you are anxious, you are living in the future. If you are at peace, you are living in the present. May you find the calm in the storm.
DNF Soundings.
Millwall delivered a commanding performance to secure a 3-0 victory over West Bromwich Albion at home. The Lions, who had suffered a heavy defeat in their previous home game against Coventry City, bounced back impressively, extending their positive run with a win against Watford before this match. The result might have come as a surprise given West Brom's recent form, which included a win against Norwich City. Millwall's ability to score 3 goals in this match showcased their attacking prowess and resilience, especially after their recent loss. West Bromwich Albion, on the other hand, struggled to find their footing in this game, continuing a run of inconsistent results. After a promising win against Norwich, they were unable to maintain momentum, suffering a significant setback against Millwall. The Baggies, who had drawn with Leicester City and lost to Middlesbrough and Derby County in their recent outings, will need to regroup quickly. This defeat marks a disappointing end to what had been a mixed bag of results for West Brom. Millwall 3-0. West Bromwich Albion statistics. The statistics from the match reflect Millwall's dominance despite having less possession. With only 39% of the ball compared to West Brom's 61%, Millwall managed to create more scoring opportunities, evidenced by their 3 goals and 3 assists. The Lions' efficiency in front of goal was a key factor in their victory. Interestingly, West Brom had more corners, 5 to Millwall's 4. But failed to convert these into goals, highlighting their struggles in the final third. Another notable statistic was the difference in successful dribbles, with West Brom achieving an 82% success rate compared to Millwall's 18%. Despite this, Millwall's defensive solidity and clinical finishing were the deciding factors. The yellow card count was relatively low, with Millwall receiving 1 and West Brom 2, suggesting a game that was competitive but not overly physical. The first key moment came early in the game when Millwall scored their opening goal in the 18th minute. This early strike set the tone for the match and put West Brom on the back foot from the outset. The Lions' second goal in the 56th minute further solidified their lead, showcasing their ability to maintain pressure throughout the game. The final nail in the coffin came in the 72nd minute, when Millwall scored their 3rd goal. This goal not only sealed the victory but also highlighted the team's relentless attacking approach. Each of these goals was crucial in determining the outcome of the match, as West Brom failed to respond effectively to Millwall's offensive onslaught.
DNF Soundings.
This is Jan with some seasonal tips and ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine based in Milton Keynes. Those of you who planted the seeds back in the spring and who managed to keep them well watered during this year of record-breaking temperatures should be receiving the fruits of your labours around now, with plenty of ripe, plump pumpkins to be had. They are relatively simple things to grow, so long as water is forthcoming and they are sheltered from biting winds. They are sun worshippers too, so pick a cheery spot with lots of space to grow. Pumpkins also deliver a pop of colour at a time when Mother Nature is being pretty dreary. If you've never tried to grow a pumpkin, you'll have to wait until April before getting involved, when the seeds should be sown, or if you'd rather opt for a plant, check in with your garden centre to see what they have on offer. Seedlings can be sown indoors and transported outside later, or plant them where you want them from the get-go, by popping 2 to 3 seeds in each hole. If you do it in May, you'll be fine. Cover with jars or sheeting for a couple of weeks, and then thin them, leaving only the strongest to flourish. If you sow inside, move outdoors in June and be prepared to nurture. The water needs to get deep down to the roots. If you end up with a squelchy rottenkin, it'll likely be the result of too much water resting at the base. Better still, when the fruits grow, place them on glass to keep them away from the wet soil. Frost will damage the pumpies, so always harvest ahead of the first frost. Provided you allow them to harden in the sun or in a greenhouse for 7 days or so, pumpkins can stick around for a long time. But to cook or to carve? That is the question. I wonder if you feel pretty unmotivated about gardening at the moment because of how the drought has affected your plants. Many have gone into early autumn behaviour and may well recover next spring. We'll just have to wait and see. The advice from the Royal Horticultural Society is not to cut anything back now. To regain your enthusiasm, why not sow some seeds? Sweet peas are always a delight and are totally hardy outdoors. I use pots about the size of the short, wide 1 litre yoghurt pots. Sow seeds 2 centimetres deep, 4 around the edge and 1 in the middle. Put them in a shady place and make sure they don't dry out. In the spring, I transplant the whole pot into the ground next to one of the 6 tall bamboo canes I have sunk into the soil and tied together with string, wigwam style. Other flower seeds you can sow this month are perennials, including hollyhock and aquilegia, and hardy annuals like cornflowers and poached eggplants, larkspur and annual poppies. With vegetables, now is the time to sow broad beans such as aqua dulce for an early harvest in May, and winter hardy salad such as landcress, lamb's lettuce, Chinese leaves and rouge diva, and winter density lettuces. Don't forget windowsill sowings of herbs, including basil and coriander, all year round.
DNF Soundings.
As I promised earlier on, here is another part of the talk I recorded from the U3A meeting, a talk given by Peter Clovier, who was a journalist reporter at the Express and Star some 30 years ago. And here he tells of his first assignment, and be warned, it's not a very pleasant story, but then the duties and work of a reporter aren't always about telling nice, pleasant stories.
I worked on the Express and Star for about 4 years in the late 90s. So as a trip down memory lane, last night we got out old copies of the Express and Star and looked at the kind of stories that I did, and when you look at it now, it was a completely different beast then, 30 years ago. Like, now it has 4 stories a page, and then it had 14, and it was bigger and funnier, and the pictures were stupid and silly, and it had more of a sense of community and pride than it does now. There was loads of business pages, and anyway, we'll come to that. It was a very, very different beast. So I was on the Express and Star. I started off on the Chronicle, in Warsaw, and I'd just done the training course, sort of 6 month training course about how to be a journalist. And on my first day, I walked into the Kron in Hallam Street in Warsaw, and realised that this was, you know, this was exciting. This was my first day, and there were three of us doing it, which surprised me because I thought newsrooms would be full of lots of people doing it, and they were like in their 20s as well. We were all really, really young. The Express and Star was set up with sort of the grown-ups in their 40s were in charge, and all the reporters were basically idiots like me and all just straight from university. And on the first day, as a joke, as I later turned out, the chief reporter, who was about 2 years older than me, about 24, said, right, some blokes died in Plek. Go and find out about it and hoover up all the pictures of the kid, get a chat with the mum, find out what happened, come back and file it. So I thought, oh, right, OK, that can't be too hard, having no idea that doing a death knock was the kind of proper worst job that anyone could do, because it's draining and it's horrible and awful, but she just made it seem like this was what you did every day for a joke. So I went out to this poor household in Plek, where a pissed lad had come back from the pub the previous night, forgot his key, and had tried to kick in the porch window and got his artery trapped on the glass. And his mum came down in the morning and opened the door to the porch and found her son, like, half in and half out of the house with blood everywhere, dead. Obviously, he would have died in a few seconds. And this, and it had happened that morning. It was an awful way to go, obviously. And I walked in, did the kind of, oh, I'm so sorry, this is awful, what was his name, how terrible this is, and went round. And in these days, those days, of course, you didn't have the internet. So if you wanted a picture of someone, you had to say, like, that's a lovely photograph of your son on the mantelpiece, can I borrow that? And you'd take it, the photographer would take a picture of it, and then you'd give it back to them. Or you'd say, have you got a family album with all the pictures of him growing up as a baby? And you know the classic Express and Star thing, here he is at school, here he is playing football, here he is last night. And she was lovely and talked about it loads and said he was, you know, a promising footballer or something, and he was a wonderful lad, and gave the full chat and gave me all the pictures. And I got in my little red mini, drove back to the Kron and said, oh yeah, here we are, here's all the pictures, here's all this, and I can write a story about it. And they thought, that's amazing, the guy can do it on his first day. And I didn't realise that that was so hard. But anyway, it was the first of many, many death knocks that you did. And that was the kind of bread and butter of the Express and Star. It was council meetings, which went on for ages, and Samwell Council never, ever agreed anything. You'd phone the police in the morning and say, what's happened? And they'd say, well, it varied, because I worked in Walsall, Samwell and Lichfield. And Lichfield was all about someone's nicked a trailer, someone's broken into a shed. Walsall was always fighting, and West Brom was always like, you know, just the mad things that happen in West Bromwich. And then the ambulance would say, drunk people had a fight or whatever, and the fire engine always, I could never understand the point of the fire service, they'd always have automatic fire alarms where someone had burnt their toast or something and the alarm had gone off and they'd never do anything. Well, great love to be a fireman. And anyway, that was the bread and butter. But I should... So that was my first date.
TNS Soundings.
Hello, it's Clive Davis from the Wildlife Sound Recording Society. This month's recording is by our recently retired president, Chris Watson. Chris, who has recorded many programmes for the BBC, introduces and describes recordings that he has made around the world.
Over the past 40 years, I've had the great privilege of recording wildlife sounds on all seven continents. And in the oceans between both poles. Back at home, and after a break, I'm always interested to hear what's been going on in our suburban back garden. I've spent a lot of time recording in the tropics, but I really do relish the four seasons here at 55 degrees north. It's Several summers ago, I came home one evening, and under some fearsome-looking brambles beneath a hawthorn bush, I heard this. I hung a mic about a metre overhead and caught a glimpse of two hedgehogs nose to nose. Most likely, this was a pair, with the male soliciting the female. We've good numbers of pipistrel bats in the area and a summer roost in the eaves. Here's one group, eager to get out hunting as soon as the daylight fades. Using an audio moth at a high sample rate, I was delighted to record these pipistrel echolocation signals and contact calls, here slowed down 8 times as the bats hawked up and down the garden. Our back garden has also served as a studio for experimenting with recording techniques. That vulture shriek, recorded in the Masai Mara, was obtained as a result of trying out a pair of personal mics in a turkey carcass after it had served several Christmas meals. When the starlings descended upon it in Newcastle-upon-Tyne, it framed the ideal close perspective I was seeking when back out in Africa. Urban foxes are doing fairly well in our neighbourhood, and on winter nights, the vixens sometimes announce their visits from the path at the end of the garden. It's always a delight that blackbirds and robins are with us throughout the seasons, friends that are always there on my return. The autumn song battles of robins. And the evening competitions as blackbirds roost. As January concludes and territories are fought over, I eagerly anticipate the first song phrases of spring. And it usually comes from one of the branches in the old apple tree. This blackbird was singing out of the chilled pre-dawn darkness. It's one of the most spirited and passionate songs I have ever heard on any continent. And it's right here on my doorstep.
Soundings.
I hope you found that a calm and pleasant ending to this week's edition, but here's Pam with the usual round of thanks to our readers.
Thanks to all our volunteers who've read the Express and Star articles for us this week. James, Alison, Lauren, Sarbjit and Jenny. Thanks to Sarah Ann for doing the quiz, to Sue for picking all the articles, for Ray for putting everything together and editing everything that I've tried to read as well, which was a bit of a rush. And thanks, of course, to Tony and Gavin for doing everything they do with the USB sticks and CDs. Have a lovely week, everyone.
And you did sort of thank yourself in passing there, Pam, for reading the last day's pieces from the papers. Thank you, because I know it's very often difficult to get readers, I won't say round them up, because we don't actually round them up, but readers have their own lives and are often too busy to be on time with reading pieces from the papers. So thanks for stepping in as usual, Pam. I know Pam went to the theatre the other night down the road from me, a play about the Mitford family, who were well known in the 1930s. And sometimes I feel what we're going through now feels sometimes a bit like the 1930s. But I hope you enjoyed that play at the Rep. And I don't get down to the Rep very often, or hardly at all, even though it's a few hundred yards down the road, and I ought to. I wonder if there's any call for a theatre group, small group of people going to the theatre together, but like all these things, it takes some organising. But it's often nice to go in company rather than going by yourself. Well, that is all for this week, slightly shorter edition than usual. I don't know how you're finding the AI voices I use to read some breaking news articles. The last one I picked up because that unfortunate story about the lady found in the canal in West Bromwich only broke yesterday. But it's a way of me to be able to squeeze in stories that often our readers can't be found to read in time. That's it then for this week. I hope, as always, you enjoyed it. We'll be back with you, of course, next week. So thanks to everybody involved. And we'll be back again with you next week. Bye-bye for now.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.